The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
So we're delighted to have, for the Culture Club today, Gorod Farrelly, who is going to be starring at the Ivy Gardens as part of the Paddy Power Comedy Festival between the 25th and 28th of July. What day are you on?
I think I'm on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I have to put you on every day.
3 nights, yeah. Oh, I'm a draw.
You are?
Well, more so than I used to be, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And what sort of stuff are you doing now in your comedy show?
In my comedy show? Well, at the moment, I have a new tour beginning in October called Gorod Rage. Which
very good, like that.
We love a pun. So yeah, I'll be doing some bits from that, which is basically the things that make me annoyed and make me angry.
I don't think of you as an annoyed or angry person.
Well, neither do I, to be honest. But a couple of years ago, I was doing a gig in the International Bar, and I was really annoyed about something. And I don't even remember what it was. And there were some comedians sitting side stage, and found the whole thing very funny because I went up and talked about whatever was annoying me. Still, I'd love to remember what it was. And have said to me ever since, you're very funny.
It was totally angry. Improv, so it wasn't anything you prepared,
was it?
It
was a material night, so I was just, you know. And I do think that the problem with me is that when I'm annoyed about something, people genuinely don't take me seriously. So, yeah, this show is just about all of the things that annoy me.
Okay.
And I really enjoy it, actually.
And you're going solo on this because I think we think of you as things like maybe going around the world with the likes of Joanne McNally.
Oh, yes. Well, you see, I've been a bridesmaid for a long time, Matt. I've been, you know, the warm-up act to many a fantastic female comedian. So, but a little while ago, things kind of turned and I kind of popped a little bit. So, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to leave Joanne behind for a little while.
What do you mean things turned and you popped
a little
bit?
Well, I mean, I think I was plodding along for years where it was like selling very modest shows. My tours were modest, let's say.
And you've become more ambitious, have you?
No, I haven't become more ambitious. It's kind of just, I guess, supporting Joanne meant I was exposed to a bigger audience and then they seemed to like me. And then my last tour just kind of got extended and extended and extended. And it would have been a great achievement had Joanne not sold 70 nights in Vicar Street the previous year. So, my achievement very much pales in comparison. But it did.
I hope she paid you well as a warm-up act.
Oh, she did. She did. I
thought I was going to get the opportunity for you to suddenly unload and have Gorod rage about how poorly you were paid by Joanne McNally.
No, myself and Joanne were very good friends, but business is business, so we do negotiate.
Can I get somebody else to do that for you?
Look, they're like, you know, we have agents, of course, but we've the same agent, which never really helps.
No, that doesn't make much sense. Yeah,
so we just slug it out.
Right. Okay. Let's move to your Culture Club choices and we talk a little bit more about comedy, I'm sure, as we go through it. We always start with music. We always ask every guest to nominate the first single, if they're of that age, that they can remember purchasing. And you have it. You know what you did.
Yeah, I remember the first single. It was actually before I started buying records. I started buying records around the Kylie and Jason, especially for you era, that would have been me. But this record was Mel and Kim, Respectable. Before that, I had my parents' record collection, which was like ABBA and the Nolans and Neil Diamond. And we would play them to death. And then this song... if you know the song, Respectable, there's kind of like the chorus is, Tay, 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 Tay. And as children, we would just say that over and over and over again. And then I really remember my dad saying, we must buy that record. And this was just bizarre to me. It was like, you can actually buy something that's on the television, you can just buy? And I remember going with him when we bought the record. And I just couldn't believe it. I didn't realise there was actually... that records existed. I thought they were just these things that my parents had for years ago.
I love that idea of your dad deciding to bring you to go out and buy this.
Yeah, I remember where we bought it too. We bought it in a branch of Golden Discs, I think in Janelle Shopping Centre, but when there was a shopping centre in Finglas, yeah. And it was, I remember we played it to death and I think the B-side is an instrumental of it. So we would just literally play it and then flip it over and sing it badly and then flip it back and drove my parents demented.
Let's hear the A side. Respect the bone. Respect the bone. Respect the bone. Respect the bone. Respect the bone.
We
Aiken and Waterman production, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
They were the big thing
at
the time.
They were the big thing. This was the start of Stock Aiken and Waterman. Like, they were just slightly before their heyday. This was one of their first big...
It's a banging pop tune still, isn't it?
Yeah, it's such a great song. And I remember at the time, it was, I think maybe 3 years after it, because they were kind of around for a while, and then one of them died. Yeah, that's she right. died. She got cancer.
Yeah.
And I remember being devastated seeing it on the news. But I still have that. I have a big record collection. And I still have that 7-inch with Property spelt wrong of Garrod Eamon Farrelly written on the back of it in like big block capitals.
How did you spell Property?
I think I put an I in it.
Your favourite album is one I have never heard of.
Oh, Living Under June by Jan Arden.
Who's Jan Arden?
Jan Arden is one of my great discoveries. I have two types of music that I used to love when I was a kid, which was pop music or girls with guitars. And Jan Arden falls into that category. She's still making music today and she is absolutely massive in Canada. She is, you know, would be the equivalent of, I guess, an Alanis Morissette over there. And she's had a sitcom that ran for 3 seasons over there. She's a brilliant writer. She had numerous books. And Living Under June was the album. I found this album in a very strange way. I do a podcast called Agony Rants with Niamh Kavanagh, who won the Eurovision. And Niamh lived around the corner from me. And around... So I've known her for a very, very long time. And around, I'd say it was 1998. I think I would have been in college. And Niamh was recording an album. And her producer gave this album to Niamh and said, I think we should do a cover. And Niamh went away and she demoed 3 or 4 of those songs. So I heard Niamh's versions of them. I thought, God, they're great songs. And then I tracked down the album for myself, which I bought in Georgia Street Arcade. There used to be a record shop in the middle of that. And it's a classic album. I think we don't make albums the way we used to make them back in the day. You know, there's different styles of music on it. It's very much a thing you sit all the way through to the end, which is like this, It Looks Like Rain, which is the last song, which is just like this beautiful kind of jazz number. She's an incredible singer-songwriter. And what's interesting about her songs is the lyrics don't rhyme. But I can't describe it. She's an incredible singer and the music is just amazing.
The track we have is called Insensitive.
Yes, and it's interesting because that's her biggest hit. That was number one all over Europe. But it's the only song in, I think, the 15 or 20 albums that she's written that she didn't write herself.
Ah, and we managed to pick that one out for you.
But it is her biggest hit. But yeah, it's a great song. And she's incredible. I had the experience of seeing her live. You know, she's my little secret. Like, nobody else knows her really over this side.
Until now. And Niamh Kavanagh knows her.
Yeah, of course. And then I was in Vancouver maybe 3 years ago and I went to see her in concert in an arena with thousands of people that were massive fans of her. I thought, oh my God, I found my people.
Let's hear a bit of Jan Arden. introduction to her. Is that typical type of song?
Yeah, I think so. The album, my favourite Jan Arden song is Could I Be Your Girl, which is the opening track of Living Under June. But she's gone on such an evolution with all of her albums. Like she became known for the sad slow song, and then she has released albums that are a lot more rockier. She has this incredible canon of work. And I remember at the time as well, I Googled her back when I had like a big old Dell in my box room before we had laptops. And she had this website where she would write a blog every day. I guess it was like the old version of social media, and her writing and her blogs were just absolutely incredible.
You know what, you just got me down the rabbit hole of Google as well. Now I decided to look for Canadian female pop singers, see where she rates, and I didn't realise, it just shows you, Celine Dion is Canadian.
Right? From Quebec, isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
Alanis Morissette, who you mentioned as well.
Yes.
Shania Twain, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I just thought American country singer, shows you what I know. Avril Lavigne, Carly Rae Jepsen, quite a lot. She comes in, Nelly Furtado.
Nelly Furtado. I forget about her.
Grimes.
I don't know Grimes.
Oh, married to Elon Musk.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
But also a singer. And okay. Jan Arden comes up on the list there as well.
Yeah, okay. She has some incredible songs. Like, when I'm on tour, I will sometimes go make my own Jan Arden playlist of, like, the deep cuts and the B-sides and the... I'm still, like, you know, when matters of the heart rear themselves, I will put on Insensitive, of course.
Your favourite band?
Yes.
Shampoo?
Oh, Matt, please tell me you know Shampoo.
Well, I'm not sure I do. Maybe I'll recognise Shampoo when we play a bit of Shampoo music.
You probably will. They're most known for the song Trouble.
Which is the one we have.
We're in trouble. But they were an indie band who kind of reinvented themselves as a pop act. So their Trouble was supposed to be their debut single, but they were actually in existence before then. But Shampoo are fascinating for the simple reason that they had a massive hit. They were kind of two belligerent teenage girls who told everybody to go away in the nicest possible terms, insisted on writing all their own songs, and then became massive in Japan. And because they'd written everything, they wouldn't allow people to remix it. Because back in the day, if you bought a CD single, you got the song and you got six mixes or four mixes. But they insisted they were going to write every single song. They were going to write B-sides. And they had this huge body of work. So when they went to Japan with Trouble, they suddenly became massive, like really, really big. And the Japanese record company wanted more albums, so they did them because they had the material. And within a very short space of time, they were on the rich list in the UK, despite not being
known on this side of the world.
In the UK. And yeah, they were at 19 years of age, they were the 23rd richest women in Britain. It's phenomenal. It's such a great story. And during COVID, I found on Instagram that the neon light that they used to use when they were on Top of the Pops, that said Shampoo, is actually in a hairdresser's in Brighton. So when I was on tour in Brighton with Sarah Millican, I went in to see it and I wrote a thing about it for Instagram. And about 6 months ago, I was contacted by somebody who was putting together a box set of all of Shampoo's albums and all their work. And they asked if I would go and interview them for the box set. So I interviewed them, and they were incredible.
Oh, it was good, because you know they say all the same, don't meet your heroes.
Absolutely brilliant. The thing about Shampoo was all their lyrics were so smart, so funny, very, very tongue-in-cheek. Like, if you listen to their first album, We Are Shampoo, I mean, they take a pop at everybody. Like, they were two teenagers writing lyrics in their bedrooms. It was great.
Are they still going?
No, they finished. They literally disappeared off the face of the earth in 2001. And there was many kind of, where are Shampoo?
You know where they are.
I know where they are.
Where are they?
They are living very nice lives in London. They've recently joined Instagram. And, you know, there's talks that maybe they may do something. But they're very much of the opinion that they had this moment, they kind of captured a zeitgeist, and they're not interested in being famous at all. They loved making the music, and they had a really, really good time.
Let's hear Trouble.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble. Something's come along and it's burst our bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble. Gotta get
That sounds to me a bit like a British P-52s.
Yes, that's the vibe. Yeah, and actually Miley Cyrus recently covered their song Delicious for Perfume Ad.
Ah.
Yeah, so they're kind of back in the zeitgeist.
Jeez,
so
they make a fortune out of that.
That's the thing. For two women that started when they were 19 years of age, they've made very, very smart business decisions.
Okay, best gig.
Oh, God, my best gig. The best gig I was ever at was either Placebo in the Olympia, in maybe 1995, or I can't remember what one I said.
You see, this is it. I should have given you your list of your own things.
What
did you actually? You said it was Belinda Carlisle in Vicar Street.
Yes, up until that gig, it was Placebo in the Olympia. And it was
so good that you can't even remember it.
It was incredible. You see, I go and see Belinda Carlisle on every single tour.
Really? Why?
Yeah, she's just great. She's absolutely brilliant. And it was my first gig back after COVID, you know, when we never thought we'd do all this again. And it was Vicar Street, which is, an amazing venue and I love it. And she just came out and hit the audience like this whirlwind. And I've seen her loads of times before, but I've never seen her like this. It was just, obviously it was COVID, you know, it was this joyous moment where we got all of these songs from, you know, back in the day. And she's just fantastic in concert. It's so funny because I remember somebody saying to me, can she still sing? And I was like, well, she was never that great a singer. So she still sounds the same. But yeah, it was fantastic. It was, hit after hit and joyous.
We need to take a break. Garold Farrelly, the comedian who you will see at the Paddy Power Comedy Festival, tickets on sale now at ppcomedyfestival.com. We're moving off the music and let's move to movies.
Okay.
And you've nominated Working Girl.
I have. I do love that film. I love late 80s, early 90s films are they're very much my comfort blanket. Things like The Beverly Hills Cops, Big Business, you know, anything where Bette Midler plays that character that Bette Midler plays. And Working Girl is just, I think it's just such a brilliant, brilliant movie. And I don't know why, I'll be honest with you, because when I watch it, it's an incredibly simple story. It's, you know, woman breaks up with boyfriend and gets promotion. I mean, that's simply what it is. There's not a lot going on there, but I just think it's so brilliantly put together, and every character is a gem. Like Joan Cusack plays that, is it Cynthia, I think her name is? She's the secretary. Was it coffee, tea, me? I love every bit of it.
Let's hear a clip from it. Melanie Griffith as Tess, Sigourney Weaver as Catherine in Working Girl.
I called the inn. They said all they can give you is a ground floor single in the new wing.
Did you tell them it was me?
Well, I said Parker.
Helmut? Hier ist Catherine Parker. Wunderschön, danke. Und Sie? Wie ist der Rücken?
Gut. Und Marlena? Fabelhaft. Hören Sie, ist es möglich, das 314 zu bekommen?
Vielen, vielen Dank. Sie sind mein Süßer.
Gut. Bis heute Abend dann. Also.
Ciao. It's this tower room with a canopy bed and a fireplace big enough to stand in. Perfect. Everything's in place.
For what?
Man I've been seeing for a while. I think he's it. And I think this could be the weekend we decide. He said there was something very important he wanted to discuss with me. I think he's gonna pop the question.
You do?
I think so. We're in the same city now. I've indicated that I'm receptive to an offer. I've cleared the month of June. And I am, after all, me.
Well, what if he doesn't pop the question?
I really don't think that's a variable. Tess, you know, you don't get anywhere in this world by waiting for what you want to come to you. You make it happen. Watch me, Tess. Learn from me.
Okay, if I remember Working Girl rightly, could it be slightly cliched, as in is the sort of underestimated bimbo and the tough social climbing bitch, and then it all turns into something different by the end?
Yeah, nothing, you know, it's not reinventing the wheel by any stretch of the imagination, but there's something about it. And I was reading about it, apparently at the time Melanie Griffith was going through a lot of addiction problems, and I think that played into the performance, because there's something a little bit dead behind the eyes about that character. She's very, very understated, almost to the point where she's barely acting, I think, in some scenes. And it just really works. It's so... Like, the character is just so isolated and so it's melancholy. And even when she does get the big job at the end, there's this scene where the camera will just...
Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it.
Listen, if you haven't worked this out within the first 5 minutes. But the camera kind of pulls back and you just see her in this tiny window and you realise, well, you know, no matter what she does, she's just this big, tiny cog in this big machine. But yeah, it's such a great movie, and there's so many cameos of people who, you know, obviously there's the stellar cast, but there's people like Kevin Spacey plays a sexual predator in it, imagine.
Exactly, well cast.
Imagine. And I'm convinced that there is an uncredited Christian Slater playing an ambulance man. I've looked for this on the internet, but I'm 99.9% certain that's him.
If it's not on the internet, it's not true, Gerard.
Maybe I should put it there.
Yeah. You also mentioned you love Christopher Nolan's Batmans.
Yeah, because here's the thing. One of the things that I'm not interested in is superhero movies, sci-fi movies. They don't do it for me. Whenever I read In Space, I'm out. I'm absolutely done. But I've always loved Batman. And it comes from when I was growing up, when I was a kid, there was a... We used to call it the square-headed Batman cartoon. And it was this very dark kind of cartoon. You know, it was kind of like an animated series for adults, I think, to be honest. And I really feel that Christopher Nolan's Batman used that as its starting point. And I think that was the best Batman. All of the other Batmans never really did it for me. But I love the Christopher Nolan ones, the trilogy.
You're a big fan of plays and musicals, I believe, are you?
Yeah. Yes, a big fan of plays and musicals.
Go to a lot of them.
Yeah, do you know what? I haven't gone to as many since COVID as I thought I would, which, that's too bad. But before that, I would regularly go. When I worked in an insurance company, we used to have flexi time, and I could get a day off. You could get a day off a month if you worked up the hours. And I used to, many times, I would use that as get a Ryanair flight over, see a matinee, and get a Ryanair flight back. It was just something, I just used to love to do it. I love going to see plays and musicals on my own.
Okay, but some of the choices you make are interesting because I'm not familiar with them.
Oh, yeah.
So plays, Michael Frayn.
Noises Off. Oh, I've seen that play, oh God, maybe 10 times. It's a play about a production of kind of like an old English comedy. And you get to see the same act of that play within a play 3 times, but you get to see it at the dress rehearsal, you get to see it midway through the tour when all the cast are starting to hook up with each other and form relationships or have little spats, and then you get to see it on the closing performance. So it's the same thing 3 times, but it's a farce. You know, at the last time they absolutely hate each other and they're, you know, sabotaging each other.
And you also love Terrence McNally.
Love Terrence McNally, yes.
You have a couple of choices there, Juice or Masterclass?
Yes, Masterclass is the story. It's a masterclass in opera supposedly given by Maria Callas. And it's absolutely incredible. I've seen that a few times as well. I saw it with Tyne Daly, who one of my favourite actresses.
We get to
absolutely love her. And Juice was on Broadway with Marion Seldes, who was originally in Delicate Balance, and Angela Lansbury. And it was basically two tennis stars long past their prime watching a tennis game. He's Terrence McNally, he's a gay writer, and he does this thing of he writes his female characters really, really brilliantly. And both those plays are just incredible.
And then for musicals, you've picked a Stephen Sondheim musical, Company.
Yes, which is interesting because I'm not a massive fan of Stephen Sondheim's music. It's all a bit samey for me now, to be honest. I like Gypsy, where he just did the lyrics, but the subject of his musicals is always the writing in the musicals is always absolutely brilliant.
Although this is based on plays, isn't it, by George Firth?
Yes, Company.
Yes.
Yeah, that is, it's just all about relationships. And the first time I ever saw that was, I saw it on Broadway, where everyone in the cast played the musical instruments. There was no orchestra. And it was absolutely incredible. Like, because the music in Company is really amazing.
Well, let's hear a little bit. Being Alive, sung by Rosalie Craig, who took on the role of Bobby in the 2018 version of this musical. God, that's very, how would I put it, musical, isn't it?
That's it. Musical. Now, what's interesting about that version that you just played is that's the 2018 West End version.
Yeah.
Which swapped the genders of a lot of the role, of two of the roles. So the main role is actually played by a man who is unsuccessful in love. And they swapped it to be a woman in that version. And they also swapped a character of Amy to be Jamie. So a woman became a gay male character, and that was played by a pre-fame Jonathan Bailey from Bridgerton. It was interesting to see it from that perspective, like, because it's been around a while, so it's interesting when the gender gets swapped.
Okay, books. Favourite book or favourite author? You've gone for William Golding's Lord of the Flies. Why so?
It's interesting, because I did two novels for my Leave and Cert, Lord of the Flies and Catcher in the Rye, and they have never been more relevant. Today. I love both of those novels, and they're just about the anarchy that happens. And I think it's fascinating that I did them 30 years ago, and they're, you know, they could be ripped from the headlines with what's going on at the moment, you know, like the themes are just so relevant.
I'm conscious of time because we've been talking so much. Sorry. I've been told to have it. No, it's my fault.
We'll wrap it up.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to wrap it up because you have to tell me about why you love Cagney and Lacey so much.
I loved Cagney and Lacey because I wasn't allowed to watch it. When it was on television, my mother watched it and it just looked great. And I was never allowed to watch it. And then thankfully, when I was a layabout student, TV3, as it was, reran it at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I fell madly in love with it. It is completely timeless. The stories, again, could be ripped from the headlines. All of the things that we talk about today, they talk about, and it was the first time I'd ever seen empathy, I think, in a cop show, because, you know, there's incredible
acting. Wasn't one of the characters alcoholic in this
thing? One of the characters was an alcoholic, yeah, the other one was a working mother.
Yeah.
And they would have extensive conversations about having shot somebody, which in other cop shows, people are like, yeah, well, I shot somebody. But
They agonized over this.
And it was, they were, I guess, the creator of it said that they were two police that happened to be women. They were two women that happened to be police officers. And it was just so revolutionary for the time.
You also have Alf down as one of your formative TV shows.
Yes, a lot of my cultural stuff comes from the fact that I'm the eldest of six. So I would have watched a lot of the stuff that they were allowed to watch. And when we were growing up, Ray D'Arcy on the Den would play Alf every single day. So I watched Alf every single
day. Remind me, Alf was a big sort of...
Alf was an alien who ate cats.
Yeah.
And
it was a sort of a Sesame Street giant puppet, was it?
Yes, he was a giant puppet. And he would always shout for the guy who owned the house, which was called Willie. And whenever anyone in our house saw Willie, we would also shout Willie.
Anything modern day television?
Modern day television? God, no.
No, okay.
I'm going to be honest.
We have to finish. We've one other thing. Cultural buried treasure. Anything that you would recommend to anyone that perhaps gets overlooked? And you have an Irish singer-songwriter you want to talk about.
Yes, Naomi Coleman, who is absolutely fantastic. She wrote an album that I found when I was in school. I think it was Do My Leaving Cert when that album came out, and I loved it. She was, to me, she was going to be the next, you know, Sinead O'Connor. She had that same voice. She supported Sinead O'Connor on tour. Her lyrics were incredible. And she made a couple of albums, went off to Los Angeles, and she just released an album there this year.
Well, actually, the track we have is from her 99 album, Bring Down the Moon. It's a cover, though, not her own lyrics. This is a cover of The Cure's Love Song.
Oh, yeah.
We have to finish there. Garode Farley's Culture Club. Garode is playing in the Paddy Power Comedy Festival in the Ivy Gardens between the 25th and 28th of this month. And I also see you have tickets on sale for next April in Vicar Street, the 25th of April next year. That's forward planning.
I know, yeah. My tour starts in October and it's going to run right through to next summer. So, the GarodeFarley.com is where all the tickets are. So I'm all around the country. So come see me.
Garode Farley, it's been great having you at the Culture Club. Thank you so much.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.